number one independent television network presents the following sports exclusive.
You're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
Follow us on Twitter at Basically Sports.
Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.
And check out every episode of the show at basicallysports.tumblr.com.
Now here's your hosts, Zach,
Greg,
Mike.
And this is Andy, and you're listening to Basically a Sports Show.
We are talking to Chris Creamer of sportslogos.net, and he is an author, and he's also started a new podcast of his own with Paul Lucas, the Unified Podcast, which you can listen to. It's all over, you know, where, as Greg would say, good podcast. Was it Fine Podcasting is sold? Is that what you say, Greg?
Wherever Fine Podcasting is sold, yes.
And you can go to Twitter at Unified Cast. And but I would say, though, if you're listening to the podcast, it is – you'll find out very quickly it's much better to – it's the whole experience when you watch it on YouTube. And I think you've been uploading the videos to the sportslogos.net YouTube channel. Is that where they're going to be from now on for people to check them out?
Yep, that's where they're going to live. Paul didn't have a YouTube presence, and I slowly had built one up, so mm-hmm. we decided I'd be the place to go.
Yeah, I mean it's because it's almost vital to it because – not only do you add in, you know, the like in this case, episode two was a lot of uniform patches and things like that to kind of obviously provide a visual frame of reference instead of just kind of talking about it. And you guys did a lot of self-mocking a little bit for you with the 20th anniversary patch and stuff like that. So definitely the way to watch it. And so like how long you mentioned in episode one. That you've been kind of cooking this up idea up with Paul for a while. That relationship has been going on for a good while. Do you feel like you're, what, three episodes in now? Because you just recorded fairly recently three?
We recorded episode three yesterday, and it's going to go – it's going to be made public tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning, Thursday – February 18th.
Okay.
Whenever you're listening to this, yeah.
So is that relationship like, because you guys have you've met in person, you've hung out with each other and spent time with each other and all this. Is it
I taking, slept on his couch.
Yeah. Same. Is the podcasting dynamic a different altogether way of speaking, or do you just, have you reached that level to where you're just kind of hanging out?
I found the first episode, it was a little unusual. I think I was holding back a little bit because I knew it was being recorded. But once episode two came around, you'll notice at the beginning of episode two, we sort of have a little casual conversation, you know, how'd you spend your Super Bowl? The point of that was, Paul and I, we have these casual conversations all the time. And many times I've thought, well, these should be recorded because they're just so great and so entertaining. And I think people enjoy hearing them. So I think at the more we go, the more natural we'll get,
right,
as we get used to the fact that these things are being recorded. You know, episode three recorded yesterday. That was, a little more comfortable chatting with each other in front of the microphones. And it'll get better and better as it goes on. And you'll see, you know, I make playful little jokes and jabs at him. I think I even make a reference to him hating purple in this one because it's a – we're talking about Major League Baseball and the Rockies come up. Ah. So, I don't mind, taking a little playful shot at him now and then. I think it comes across as a very casual, fun, easygoing conversation. I hope people find it that way.
I think we referenced it on the show as calling it like among the sports logo community of people. It's like the team up of Marvel and DC when it comes to, the sport, Chris Creamer's sportslogos.net and UniWatch. So what's that, how did that relationship kind of come about? I mean, were you guys ever really adversarial or has it always been kind of a friendly community amongst the, you know, the sports logo aficionados?
I can't recall a time where I ever like considered Paul a rival in terms of like, you know, I got to beat him or, you know, he's taking something away from me in that sense. Clearly we were covering the same beat, but there were plenty of times before we started hanging out with each other where I would send him an email and say, hey, you know, I found this and I think it more suits your audience than mine. Do you want it? And he would say, yeah, sure. Thanks. And he would post it. But up until, 2014, which was when the first time we actually met each other in person, We didn't talk much, and it wasn't like because there was a rivalry or anything. It was just, we just didn't talk much. Like, we had our own two separate communities. When I met him, it was in New York. I was on a family vacation, and I had stopped in town to, I had drinks with Todd Radom one night, and then I had, it was like roast beef sandwiches with Paul at Katz's Deli the next day, which was fantastic. And we just hit it off right off the bat. Like, it felt like we were friends for years, very natural. And I guess it makes sense because our interests are so similar. From there we became closer and closer. Like I said, at one point I spent a night on his couch when I couldn't find a hotel room in New York. And we've been to, Milwaukee together. We've been to Las Vegas together. We've been to New York together. We've been all over the place together, just running into each other, covering these things over the years. He went with my kids to the San Diego Zoo, not awesome. Too long ago. So, like, the kids call him Uncle Paul. You know, he's part of the family at this point. Wow. And I couldn't be happier about that. You know, he's a great guy.
You mentioned sorry.
Go ahead, Mike. No, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, you mentioned that, in those early days before you met up in person, you would sometimes send Paul an email saying, as you said, I think this suits your audience more than mine. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the difference between the audiences that you reach? Because you both cover the same sort of stuff, but mm-hmm. you're kind of reaching different demographics. In your opinion, what would you say the differences are?
Well, I'm not sure if it's still this way, but at least at the time, I considered Paul's beat to be like extraordinarily detailed aspects of uniform, a player wearing a stirrup. One of the things that I sent him was I was at a baseball game and I noticed a player had a big patch of white on his cap, like from rubbing it with something too often. And I thought, there's no way I can turn this into an article on my site. It's not my thing, but this seems like something Paul would love. So that was sort of the thing I was getting to, and that, like, his audience was more focused on the extremely detailed minutiae of a uniform outside of the design, perhaps. Mm. Whereas mine was, this is what the team wears, this is what the patch looks like, these are the colors. And I don't know if that's audience versus audience. It might just be Paul's interests versus my interests. Mm-hmm. Like, I was never that interested in if a player wore a stirrup or not. Like, that wasn't my thing, and it still isn't really my thing. But Paul loves it, so if I see it, I'm going to send him that.
Gotcha.
I was just going to say that you, Radom, and Paul Lucas in the same room, that is like the high summit of uniform stuff.
Yeah, well, what was it, 2 springs ago, I was in New York to do the New York Jets when they unveiled their uniform.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Don't apologize. It's an excuse to go to New York, right? Like, that's right. So I knew Paul would be there. He was there for Sports Illustrated in that brief time in between ESPN and now doing Fully Independent. And I was invited, and they said, hey, do you want to take a photographer? Like, usually my wife is a photographer. She couldn't go because she's watching the kids. So I just said, hey, Todd, you want to be my photographer? And of course, Todd said, absolutely. Like, that's a fun night for him. And free beer. Why not?
Right.
So it's Paul, Todd, and I, and we're just the three of us together, like, buddies covering this New York Jets thing, all hanging out, hammering out our articles together. Todd snapping away. And afterwards, we all go to a local pub and just keep the party going. So the three of us, we get together so well. And it's crazy that I have to consider this as work, because really, like, just hanging out with those two guys covering in a uniform like that is, is a dream come true. It's pretty amazing.
When you were at the bar afterward, were there Jets fans there crying because of the new uniforms? Was that a morning kind of awake?
I think there's Jets fans crying anywhere, especially any pub you go, right? Like, you're just going to come across
any day of the week, any hour of the day, probably.
For a variety of reasons. I have a question. Going back to the national exposure, when you started this, when we discovered Sports Logos, the forums on sportslogos.net, all of that, rarely did a uniform unveiling, even at like the Big Four level, get the attention it does now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you and Paul have both played a huge role in that. Did you ever expect in your life to see it become what it has become today when you started this?
No, absolutely not. And with good reason, right? It wasn't seen as something that was even possible, right? Like, so I couldn't have envisioned that a logo or uniform unveiling would be as big as it is now. Like, it used to be a team unveils a new logo or a uniform and it gets sort of like a last paragraph mention in an article, right? It would be, like, oh, the Blue Jays increased their season ticket prices, blah, 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 blah. Oh, and by the way, they also changed their logo and uniforms.
Well, it's telling if you actually go onto the CCSLC forums, there's actually a thread for archiving these old mm-hmm. unveilings. And the one that always kind of stands out to me is the 1997 Denver Broncos redesign, which was not only is it a major NFL team completely rebranding themselves, but it was a very modern uniform. It started a lot of trends that are still kind of ongoing. So mm-hmm. it seems like a big deal. But you go back and you click that link and it takes you to the old news story. And it's basically like the team president and like three players all standing around in a Marriott conference hall. And there's like one guy taking pictures and it's like, and there's like a banner with the new logo and the guy's guy and the team president's like, yeah, this is our new uniform. And that's that. And then, now, you know, you've got, you know, smoke machines and raising platforms on stages, mm-hmm. and it's
Nike
like
speak and yeah. what the meaning of the color is to the soul of my body.
Yeah, I don't want to like pat myself on the back or like quote my resume or anything, but I may have been the only sports talk show host in the country in 1997 outside of Denver talking about that uniform. and when I brought it up, because I didn't tell anybody, we sat on the way and I'm like, oh, and by the way, the Broncos have these new uniforms that I really hate. And everybody looked at me like I had three heads.
You're fired.
Like, why would you even care about this? Right, exactly. But yeah, it was a different world back then.
I had a situation like that somewhat recently when I was actually at the game. I was actually at the game where they retired Marty St. Louis' number for the Tampa Bay Lightning, and the banner looked like they modeled it after the current jerseys. And I kind of just said to the person I was with, you know, wouldn't it be kind of cool if the banner was in the style of like the uniforms that he won the cup here in? And like the look I got was like, why would it matter? And I just quietly shut up. And
see what you've created, Chris? Look what you've unleashed all of this on the world.
I refuse to apologize. Chris, the only thing I might apologize for is if in any way, shape, and form, Paul and I are responsible for the proliferation of 5th, 6th, and 7th uniforms that teams wear now. If I'm responsible for that in any way, I will apologize for that.
You know what, though? I think inadvertently, and I've said this on this show numerous times, that I think that we complain about, you know, all the NBA jerseys and all the crazy uniforms you see in college. I think that we're maybe not directly, but indirectly responsible for that. I think that our interest is kind of what, like, you know, fed the beast and got us to where we are now, where people realize, hey, there's a market out there for this stuff.
Yeah. So we should shut down the forum.
So maybe we are. Maybe.
What do you think?
We're not.
Would it get rid of the really bad modern uniforms? I mean, it's. I'm not saying it's a deal breaker. It just, you know, we can talk.
Is it going to get rid of the city and earned and association jerseys? Are we going to fix that somehow by doing
just
that?
Just wait till Nike gets their hands on Major League Baseball.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming.
We're going to get more colored pants. Is that something that we can look forward to?
Probably. I mean, I don't have any foresight on this, but like Nike's involvement in Major League Baseball so far is just stitching a swoosh on the old Majestic jersey. That's it, right?
Did they do the Diamondbacks rebrand, or was that before the purchase?
That had nothing to do with that. Yeah, that was Majestic. Oh, okay. As far as I know, Nike has had nothing to do with MLB this past season, aside from, you know, they literally took the Majestic uniforms, took off the patch on the sleeve, and then put the Nike logo on the chest. And that's going to change, I believe, after this season, where Nike is completely redoing the uniform. And
if I see the Blue Jays wearing something, if I see the Blue Jays in gradient, I might throw my computer out the window.
Just wait till the graphite comes back into style, Mike. That'll be
Oh god, it's gonna be powder blue to graphite gradient. That's what it's gonna be.
Every 20 years, the trends come back. So we're almost there.
Chris, would you say that – and not to answer your question for you, but was there ever a particular rebranding that really just like broke your heart? Because it's like, oh, no, they changed XYZ. Because, I mean, I know you're a huge Jays fan. And, yeah. I mean, that one, the pewter, the graphite look was – Well, it was a look, and it was did it? Did you feel like personally like hurt from that? Is there any similar experience besides that one?
Well, the 04 Jays is the best example because there was so much anticipation with that. Going into that rebrand, I remember thinking, "Oh, it'd be amazing if the Jays went to like a blue and gray color scheme." And I can't tell you why. I just liked that combination at the time. And back then, it wasn't like, "Let's go back to the World Series uniforms." Like those weren't considered iconic enough yet at that point. So a news report came out saying Blue Jays rumored to go to blue and gray color scheme next season, and I was so excited. I was like, "That's exactly what I wanted."
The monkeys,
can't wait to see it.
The monkey's paw curled there at that point.
That's right. Oh man, that cursed monkey paw. And then when that came out, what was I doing? I think I was sitting at work. I went to BlueJays.com. I hit refresh, and then there it was on the screen. And like, I was just like, "What?"
And then you dropped to your knees and yelled, "Not like this."
Oh, man. Yeah, no, I just couldn't believe it. And I had worked for the Jays at the time, and they were doing some sort of special ceremony before the game. I believe they were planning on wearing the uniforms that game. This was early September 03, so the 03 season was still going on. Mm. And I remember going to the stadium, and they had a display set up with the jerseys on mannequins. And that's where I got to see the road jersey for the first time, which they didn't end up wearing because it was so bad.
The graphite head to toe, right?
Yeah, it was, I mean, you call it graphite, but it was practically black, right? Like that's what it looked like. Head to toe, like you say, hat, jersey, and pants were all like this almost black color. And yeah, I almost cried when I saw that. What is it all for? Why am I doing
this? Well, I just remember the thing about it was just how boring it seemed because growing up a Jays fan myself, they were always, you know, they were always this royal and white team of splashes of red and powder blue. It was a colorful uniform. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, you know, this rebrand happens and every home game is just white, silver, and gray. It was very jarring.
Yeah, even at first, the first couple of seasons where they wore the gray cap with the white jersey and pants and almost no blue whatsoever. Yet they still played in that extremely blue, you know, sky dome with all the seats were blue and no fans were at the game. So all you could see was blue all around them and this silver and white team with just, it broke my heart.
But it paid off for both of you because look at what they wear now.
Exactly.
I mean, my goodness, this is the best uniform in baseball. Probably, or it could be.
Talk about the best glow up in sports history.
So
I still, speaking of the forums, I still like every now and then you see someone who's like, "I like the graphite Jays look." And I just, it's one of those like, can that just be a bannable offense from now on?
Got my vote.
Well, anyone who likes something weird like that, typically they weren't around when they're actually worn. Is that the case with this? Like when people who,
it's crazy. It's crazy. I teach high school, and back when I was teaching in Kitchener, I would have kids who would come in and they'd love the purple Toronto Raptors stuff, like with the jagged pinstripes and all that stuff. And they'd go, "Oh yeah, no, this stuff's so awesome." And I would just shake my head. I'm like, "You weren't around when this was the everyday uniform, because if you were, you would not like it as much as you."
Right. And I say the same thing to so many people. Like when the Raptors wore that uniform, we were a laughingstock. We were an embarrassment. If I went anywhere, like I wouldn't wear a Raptors jersey because like if I went on vacation somewhere, I couldn't wear it because I'd be mocked.
Not even vacation. I wore a Raptors jersey, you know, to school as a little kid in, you know, just outside of Toronto, and I got mocked. So, yeah.
Well,
Chris, when it comes to... Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's fine. When it comes to these unveilings that we've had over the years, in starting the site and doing all the things that you've done, I mean, obviously, we all came to the boards, to the site in different ways. Myself, huge Anaheim Mighty Ducks fan, I came when there were concepts being, or the leaked designs had come out of what they were working on the for the Mighty Ducks in 2007.
That's another one that, just like the Raptors, by the way.
Well, I'm sitting here currently wearing my Mighty Ducks reverse retro, so I'm very much of the age group that love that stuff. But
sorry to interrupt. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you're fine. When it comes to the site and all this, do you remember if there was one jersey unveiling or one logo package that really kind of blew up and made the site to what it was beyond just, you know, our little corner of logo and jersey nerds to something that was a little bit more widespread?
I mean, incrementally this sort of happened. I wouldn't say there was one that put us over the top. If we are over the top, I have no idea. But just every now and then back in the earlier days, like mid-2000s, I would post a story and then I would see it in a newspaper, which was incredible. Now and then they would give us credit. Most of the time they wouldn't. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore. At least we have a little bit of a reputation for being a reliable source, which is nice. I hate to keep going back to the Blue Jays. I don't want to seem like a homer, but
go for it.
That rebrand, right, in 2011, that was huge for the site. It sort of helped that we had a leak that we were able to post that really, you know, blew things up. It was the Blue Jays and the Marlins both leaked at the same time. The now long forgotten lost Marlins logo. And then from there, you know, Major League Baseball's annual holiday uniforms, those were big for us for whatever reason. When every team in the league is unveiling five new uniforms and five new caps all at the same time. And thanks to a relationship I was able to develop with Major League Baseball, I was given early access to it. So I can actually do a extremely detailed post where I show you each and every one of these uniforms, each and every one of these caps, and can bring you quotes from the actual people who worked on these uniforms. And have it go live the second that they're released. That really helped. And that really helped legitimize. Did I say that right? Legitimize, I think. Legitimize. Thank you. The site and our coverage. I lost where I was.
It's all right. I wanted to ask. So in listening to Unified, it's kind of interesting because, like you said, you and Paul each have different kind of dynamics. So I kind of was curious that, and you've talked about this a bit on your show. So what, when you're looking at a new logo, for example, for a sports team, what are something that you look for in terms of a logo or uniform that like you go, yes, that's what I like. I gravitate towards these things typically. Do you have a few that like you're always like, ooh, yeah, I like that. Like, that's nice.
I don't think I do. I think it's just as simple as I look at it, and if I like it, I like it, and if I don't, I don't. I know that's a bit of a boring answer, but I don't think there's a formula. I could sit here and try to make up a formula on the spot for you. Maybe if it paid some sort of tribute to the franchise's history, had an eye-pleasing color scheme, a logo that isn't crazy detailed, but still has some sort of a fun hidden element in there with no Nike speak. That I guess would be my preference, but I just have to look at it to know.
Okay.
You mentioned Nike speak, so I think I had to jump on it.
Do it.
As a fan of the, when we talk about rebrands that make you just go, oh God, the Los Angeles Rams.
Oh God.
You know, that's a reveal that was laden with the Nike speak and the
Zach, the golden ratio.
Yeah, the horn represents the Fibonacci sequence and sand and sun and ugh. Do you have a particular bit of Nike speak that has kind of like stuck with you as particularly bad? I think the one that we always reference is the orange passion of the Cleveland dog, or the orange passion of the Cleveland dog pound, the brown remains unchanged.
Well, that's a classic. You can't top that one. I mean, I still get people sending me tweets about that anytime a team unveils a bit of a lackluster logo change. The first one is the one that sticks with me. And again, this isn't an interesting answer, but it's just that this was the first time I really saw it in action. So I just remember it. And that was when the Edmonton Oilers, back in the early 2000s, when they unveiled that alternate uniform. Who was it? Todd McFarlane did it?
Oh, the Robo Sperm, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I never called it that, but...
You're welcome.
it's what we call it on the boards.
I got to visit community. That place more often. Like, it sounds like a fun place.
Can be.
So I just remember reading the release for that, and the description where it's like every single rivet represents one of the Oilers' captains in team history, or and I thought, there's no way you design that with that in mind. Like, you're just making up crap.
They had a shield with 5 points for the 5 Stanley Cups, I think, too. Right. Like that, yeah.
So what did you do? Realistically, you designed this logo and then you counted, you know, oh, there's 10 dots. What does that mean? 5 Stanley Cups times 2? No, that's ridiculous. 10 captains. Yes, that's it. Let's go. Yeah, so that's just the one that sticks out for me because it was the first time I saw that and the first time I really rolled my eyes at a logo unveiling.
Oh, the best was yet to come. More still comes out every year when Nike is in charge.
There's always the Olympic Nike jerseys where they all referenced alchemy. You can't really beat that.
No, that's a tough one. That's right up there with the rest.
Well, I mean,
especially when those were particularly
bad,
bad looking. Yeah. With the shards and the what do you want to call them, feathers on the arms? Essentially,
you want to know the really sad thing about that is that I actually bought a Team Canada one.
Oh, Mike,
no. Hypocrite.
Well, I wanted to be infused with the power of alchemy, Zach.
Did it work?
Sadly, no.
Oh. Jury's still wide again out. By the Nike speak.
Exactly.
wasn't the stitching too, going back to Nike speak with the Browns, wasn't the stitching supposed to represent something as well? I can't remember what.
Yeah, the contrasting stitching. Yeah. The contrasting stitching reflects the craftsmanship of Cleveland.
Why do you remember this?
Okay.
Purge it from your mind.
This stuff just sticks. I don't know why.
Some of them are that bad.
I can say, being from Northeast Ohio, that is just absurd. There's no truth in that at all.
And it's happening again. I pointed this out to Mike. I was talking to him before we started here about how when you and Paul were recording, you're doing episode 2, and you were talking about the Browns, or 75th anniversary, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And you guys, like at one point, I think towards the end of the show, were like, I didn't think we would get, you know, 50 minutes out of this Browns thing. You talk about the Browns and you don't stop for at least like 30 to 40 minutes. That's just what happens, whether it's on the message board or whether it's in life. The Browns just end up taking up all this damn time.
The Browns,
yep.
The Browns, who, you know, last season aside, have been pretty much irrelevant since rejoining the league, and yet they really inspire strong feelings in people, one way or the other.
It's the stitching, Mike. It's always the stitching.
It's like the stitching and the gray face.
So why do you think that's what we'll do it? Why do you think that is, Greg? I feel like I don't care about Greg's opinion. Chris, with the Browns, I've heard Greg's
opinion.
You
shouldn't care about mine either.
No. Of all the teams, like the Browns have like virtually no logo at all. Their branding is as straightforward a football uniform as it gets, and when it's in certain iterations, it's perfect. But for whatever reason, there's this major just sort of magnetism to that look and that team in particular. Why do people care so much if you have a take on that? If you don't, that's fine, because it's the Cleveland Browns.
I can just guess that, you know, we have this uniform and logo set that's always been sort of no-nonsense, plain bread, and I don't mean that as an insult, and we don't want that messed with, right? Like, this is like sort of the last clean, littered uniform there is in all of sports right now, right? No logo, plain helmet, no decoration on the uniform practically. Pants are no nonsense. When Nike, you know, did their thing to it in 2015, that sucked.
Yes.
And we all knew it sucked. And then they switched back to what they have now. Now they're going to come out with a new alternate jersey next year. So we're all worried what they're going to do with that. Mm-hmm. But that's my quick and dirty take on that.
That's fine.
I think they're just the last team left, you know, from an era where, you know, people didn't wear anything.
Spoken like a true Clevelander.
I've been to Cleveland once.
Well, you've got the whole wrap down. I'll give you that. That's pretty all much right. What we think too.
The city rubbed off on me.
I want to get into something that is a big topic with us on this show, and that is the advertising that's slowly finding its way. It's already found its way on the NBA uniforms this year, on the helmets in the NHL. So, Chris, where do you think we're headed with this? Is it bad? Is it good? Is it stop here? Does it keep going?
It keeps going, right? Like, there's no debate about that. It's just going to happen. Well, at this point, we can just hope that it's done as tastefully as possible. What the NBA has done is probably the best sort of compromise we're going to get in terms of it's a small logo for the most part. They're matching the colors to the uniforms. Let's hope it stops there. Hockey, I think, was terrible. A lot of these, like, look at the Flyers. You see the Flyers helmet or the Red Wings helmet where they have
the Penguins too, with that huge blue patch.
These big giant logos on the side of their helmets. Paul and I touch on this in the next episode, and the Vegas Golden Knights and their new shiny metallic helmets. If we could think of one positive with those helmets, it's that you can't see the advertisement on the side.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Right.
But isn't that kind of against the point of having the advertisement if you're the company that
absolutely
made that money?
But I don't care.
Then again, if you're the company who, you know, paid to advertise for the Golden Knights, maybe you don't deserve nice things.
I mean, if the Knights keep losing in them, they can wear them every night for all I care. That's fine.
I always felt like with advertisements on uniforms for, like, I mean, I think all of us for the most part have been a part of the creamer boards for a decade and change now, if not longer than that. And I think that for a long time that was sort of discussed and almost kind of laughed at as like, yeah, we'll never go over that cliff. You know, that's never going to happen here. And here we are X years later. And it's
not only is it on the uniforms with the hockey now, but division names.
Fans like it, or they generally seem to not care. And that's kind of my next question for you was, We talk about the community, the message board, and we talk about the viewership and listenership of our shows and of the community and just online. And people obviously have a massive interest in uniform design, logo design, and stuff like that. But I feel like in some ways it's also a very lonely thing because, like you said, when you were upset about the Jays rebrand, for example, and it, you know, while that might have, you know, really almost in some ways hurt your feelings, if you were to like go to the average person, the average Jays fan, and say like, "Are you seeing this atrocity? Look what they've done to my boy!" And a lot of them would probably be like, "What whatever."
They take it as, "Oh, I don't care as long as they win," right? Like that's, and I guess I can't argue with that thinking. If you don't care about the uniforms, you don't care about the uniforms. That's fine. It just means that you're not as intelligent as we are.
Right. That's a good answer.
The worst part about that was that they didn't even win in them. God.
Well, I think we've all touched on this before when it comes to jerseys and what the general public thinks. The Buffa Slug was the highest selling jersey in the NHL when it was released. Mm-hmm. People don't know anything.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I hate to bring up the Browns again, but this is just to really illustrate that point. When the Browns switched last year, a friend of mine, because I was on Facebook everywhere, "Oh my God, they look like the Browns again. This is so wonderful." And he goes, "I don't see the difference."
What?
And I said to him, I said, "You've got to be kidding me. You can't tell the difference." I put two pictures up. "You can't tell the difference between this and this." No idea. I thought, oh my God, we're living in such an uncivilized world. But that just illustrates that point. Yeah. What's that?
Stop talking. Just stop talking to him, right?
I pretty much did, yeah, for a little while. I mean, I've known him for a really long time, so I couldn't completely throw him out the door. But I did, I was like, wow, dude, really? I just couldn't believe it. I understand if you don't care, but to not even know the difference, how does that even happen? My girlfriend knows more about uniforms than this guy does, and she doesn't even care. But I digress. Let's get back to the interview. Jack this thing again.
I can recall back in grade school and the day that the 49ers unveiled their one day only logo.
Yeah, I remember that too. It was awful.
And there was a guy that I knew who was a big 49ers fan. And I just walked up to him and I said, hey, did you see the 49ers change their logo? And he turned around, he looked at me and he goes, I don't care. And he yelled at me.
And, wow. Okay.
That was that.
Was that Jay Cutler?
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. But I guess another thing we should bring up here while we have you is, and I'm hoping that you and Paul will discuss this at some point. Obviously, there's the times are changing with a lot of the Native American logos and imagery being phased out from across the sports, the Big Four especially. Mm-hmm. The Washington football team, or as we call them, the 32s, we hope they go that way. And Cleveland, the Cleveland Indians are going to become whatever they're going to become. What are your, do you have any feelings about how this has been going and what you anticipate for the future of these types of brands?
Sure. Well, I feel like the time has come for change. It certainly feels that way. When my son, who at the time was maybe five, and he's using my old bed sheets when I was a kid that have all the Major League Baseball logos on them. And he points to Chief Wahoo and he goes, what's that team called? And I didn't want to tell him. Hmm. That to me was like, okay, there's a problem, right? Especially like we live in a town where there's a big Native American population. And I didn't feel right saying that to him and explaining to him what it meant and why it was there. I do hope that Washington and Cleveland eventually choose a name, because I don't like this football team trend, right? At Cleveland, there's now rumors going that they're going to be called the Cleveland Baseball Team.
Ugh.
Or the Cleveland Baseball Club, the CBCs, Mike, right? That's for us.
I like that because I just love Canada, so I'd be cool with that.
They could use that CBC exploding pizza logo on their cap.
I was thinking the butterfly, maybe. Oh.
The butterfly, the old Technicolor butterfly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe that's for 70s night.
Right. So, yeah, it's just time for a change. And one thought I keep going back to is that, you know, these teams say, the teams that insist on keeping these brands, you know, they're doing this to honor or to respect these various races or tribes. And certainly what I hear most is that they don't feel respected. They don't feel honored. They feel mocked. They feel like they're being made fun of, or they're being taken advantage of. So if your intentions are truly to honor something, right, and you find out that who you're trying to honor is offended and hurt by what you're doing, if your intentions truly are to honor and respect, you're going to listen to them, right? You're not going to tell them, oh, you're wrong. I'm going to keep honoring you this way anyways, right? Like, you would never do that. Think of you trying to, like, give a present to a friend, and you give them something that ends up making them upset or angry or hurts them personally. You don't say, no, you're keeping that. Too bad. You know? You'd say, I'm so sorry. Right, yeah. Exactly.
I mean, the argument that I've always had with some of my older relatives who are – just like who tend to have the opinion that, oh, why are they changing now? And mm-hmm. I just ask them, like, so if you met a Native person, would you call them a Redskin face to face? Like, and if the answer is no, then and you know, they all say, oh, no, I'd never do that. And it's like, well, then that's why the team shouldn't be called that.
There was an old, was it the Daily Show or the Colbert Report at some point where they were discussing the Washington Redskins name, and they had a whole group of Redskins fans all dressed head to toe in the gear. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about how, oh no, we're never going to change the name. History, history, tradition. And then they bring in a group of 5 to 10 Native Americans, and the Redskins fans immediately shut up.
Yeah.
That illustrates it perfectly. If you can't even say it to these people, then obviously there's a problem and you're aware of the problem.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, as a, like you brought up Chief Wahoo. As a kid, I loved Chief Wahoo. And as I got older, I thought, this isn't jiving. It's just not working for me, because this is clearly, they could say it was a tribute and I get it. He was a cartoony character. And the comparison you always get is, what about the Notre Dame Fighting Irish? Well, it's a different, I mean, if you've got to make that comparison, I think you've already lost the argument. But Wahoo needed to go. Indians needs to go. Redskins needed to go years and years and years ago. And I'm with you, Chris. If it's a tribute and the people that you're doing the tribute to don't like it, then that pretty much ends the discussion. I don't know where you can go from there, but people seem to think you still can.
And that's what's so odd, because if you contrast that against what we talked about earlier, to when, you know, a team will do a drastic overhaul of its aesthetic, and then you bring it up to them and they're like, I don't care. But then suddenly you're like, oh, by the way, the Washington Redskins are now the football team. And they're, oh, no, what have they done? Like, it's like, well, pick a lane here, you know, like
either you care or you don't. Right.
I mean, and I'm anticipating this change. I'm a Chicago Blackhawks fan, and I'm anticipating this change coming someday. It feels inevitable, and it feels right. I live in Champaign, where the Fighting Illini are still the Fighting Illini, but Chief Alanowicz is no more, which is in some ways unfortunate, because around the city I see everywhere still the big round Chief Alanowicz logo, and it's a beautiful logo. And there's no doubt in some of the cases of the execution of these designs, they're wonderful. In some cases, very ornate, but that doesn't matter. It really doesn't. And there's definitely, you know, like you said, it is time to change. But I do hope that people keep an open mind. And I'm thinking the website's going to get some traffic whenever Washington decides to unveil whatever it is they're going to do. So
looking forward to it.
Yeah. For both Washington and Cleveland, do you have any hopes of to what the possible names could be? We've had so many different ideas thrown around.
Spiders.
Do you have any hopes?
Come on, spiders.
I like spiders for Cleveland.
Yeah.
I like the story. I like how it's unique, right? Aside from what there's a college team called, what, the Richmond Spiders?
Yeah,
right.
Right.
It would be unique in sports. I could see kids loving it, and it's not – it's not goofy, right? Like, you could do it in a nice traditional way, and you could own the name, right? Like, there's a history behind it, and yeah, it was the worst professional team in sports history, but you can change that history.
Hey, I mean, the Browns are still the Browns after going 0-16, so it doesn't really matter.
There you go, right? Browns and Spiders, like a perfect pair in Cleveland.
Not like the Indians have an illustrious history either, so it's really to associate yourself with the losing team, not that big a deal,
yeah,
really.
I think I tried to make that point on the boards, actually, and I mentioned their, like, two World Series failures, and then, Greg, you came in and you're like, I'll have you know, Mike, like, they also lost in 1994, you know, get it right, or, like, 95 or something, but, yeah, it's the Cleveland Indians. Their drought's longer than the Leafs Cup drought, so, like, what are they clinging to,
man.
Exactly?
That hurts, man. You didn't have to bring that up.
Longer than the Leafs Cup drought by 20 years. Like, that's,
yeah,
it's a sizable.
Well, drought. I'll just say, at least we've gotten there and taken a couple shots at it since then. I'm just saying. Okay.
To switch gears a little bit,
yes.
For something else that you put out over the last, I guess it's over a year now, the Fabric of the Game book, NHL book. I got that for Christmas. It's been a great gift to kind of thumb through when I have some off time, and just the amazing kind of artwork you were able to get, and plenty of great stories of how these teams, the history of their looks. What was kind of the favorite part of making the book for you? And then, is there like a story that stuck out to you that something you hadn't known before that really kind of surprised you in how some of these things came together?
Well, my favorite part of doing the book was getting a chance to interview the people who made these decisions, you know, and really hear some of these stories. we leaned a lot on Todd's connections for those being in the design community. He talked to a lot of the people who were involved in many of the NHL designs in the 90s. It's like the New York Fishermen, the Islanders Fishermen logo, the Minnesota Wild logo. Todd got a great story about the Colorado Avalanche logo from Joe Bosak. I don't know if you saw that in there. I don't know if I want to give it away, because for me, it's let's just say it involves a printer malfunction, which the whole reason why the Colorado Avalanche wear blue now is because of a printer malfunction. And the very first interview I got to do for this book was kind of like the pinnacle for me, and that was down at the Air Canada Centre in a big fancy boardroom with Brendan Shanahan, who the president of the Toronto Maple Leafs and Hockey Hall of Famer. And just getting to sit down with him and talk about the Maple Leafs rebranding to the current logo they have now, why they did what they did, and these stories he told me about how he wanted the crest to be as big as possible on the jersey. So he had to go and get special approval from the NHL for a giant crest. And he put players on the ice with the biggest possible crest he could find. And he found out that it was, you know, hard to take face-offs with this giant logo on it. So let's scale it back a little bit. And while I was there, he, after sharing all these great stories, and, you know, he also told me this wonderful story about his first day as a Detroit Red Wing. And he let all the players skate on the ice, and he stayed in the locker room by himself, and he went and he found a mirror and he just stared at himself wearing a Red Wings uniform for the first time. And the feeling he had, you know, seeing himself in that traditional uniform, you know, after coming from Hartford, right, where uniform at the time wasn't quite so loved, to an extremely traditional franchise like Detroit. And then after our interview, he's like, yeah, Chris, I got something to show you. And he lays out for me the Leafs, I think it was their Stadium Series uniform, which they were still developing. They hadn't finished designing it yet. And so you can imagine the thrill I had seeing this. And if you remember that uniform, it came with white pants, right? It was white head to toe.
Yes, yes.
And for... So he laid it out for me on the table, and I looked and I said, oh, white pants, that's And I stopped for a second, looked up, and Brendan Shanahan is staring at me.
It's good, and, right?
And I thought to myself, remember who you're talking to. I said, that's an interesting decision. That's very unique. Didn't the Capitals wear white pants once? That's interesting. You're playing Washington in the game. Okay.
That was the Naval Academy game, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
They won the uniform to look like the, I think it was the Canadian Navy uniform.
Naval Ensign. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was my one big story where I almost insulted Brendan Shanahan's design right to his face.
Did you pull up a picture of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man on your phone and just kind of say, hey?
I did not. No.
Hey, Brendan, you've seen Ghostbusters. You may not want to do this idea. But yeah, do you guys have any more questions thrown by Chris before we let his voice rest?
We could go on all night, but he's a busy man, and it's a lot to do. So
my family misses me.
I have one. Kind of pulling off of the white pants and the hockey jerseys. We're obviously in the midst of this great NHL league-wide event with the reverse retros.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite that stood out to you as that's really damn good and we need to keep that around, and then ones that need to never see the light of day ever again?
There's plenty of great designs, and I'm very surprised. When I first heard the idea of the reverse retro program, I thought, what is the point of this? And you could say money, and that's probably the answer to all these questions, but I like to pretend it's not a factor. Like the whole idea of a retro uniform is to see a design that you remember watching when you were younger, or a design worn by former members of the franchise, and then you can sort of tie them all together and have some good, warm, fuzzy memories. And the idea of redesigning an old uniform, why are we doing this, right? It takes away the whole point of a throwback uniform in my mind. But then I saw some of them And that Tampa Bay Lightning uniform, which looks like it should have been an alternate uniform of the era. Like, it just feels like that's what they should have been wearing back totally. Then. The Montreal Canadiens, and I was surprised how good it looked, reversed blue and red. My favorite is got to be the Hartford Whalers, or sorry, the Carolina Hurricanes.
Ooh, the gray one?
Yeah, I like that. I haven't seen it on the ice yet, right? I don't think they've worn it.
They haven't worn it yet, no.
Right, so maybe I'll have to reserve my judgment to see it on the ice. But I like the idea of a gray Hartford Whalers jersey, and it looks good, in my opinion. A surprising one that I loved was that Nashville Predators one.
Yeah.
The yellow.
That's even better than it's better than the regular yellow, and it's better than the original version that they threw
yeah,
back to.
Yeah, like yeah. I feel like that's something they should go with full-time going forward. And finally, and this is a bit of an easy one, but the LA Kings.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's nice.
I love the beauty. Purple and gold combo with the old, I guess, the Chevron logo.
The Gretzky logo.
Yeah, the Gretzky logo, yeah. I feel like that's a perfect blend of eras. And, I mean, maybe a little tweak here and there to make it really work. But if you're going to be the LA Kings, you got to own that color scheme, right? Purple and gold. It's what everyone thinks about when they think of the LA Kings. And sure, they won the Stanley Cup a couple times wearing black and silver. Gretzky wore the black and silver, but you're purple and gold. And even in our in the book, Fabric of the Game, in for all the chapters, anyone who's read the book, you'll notice that we picked the team's current color scheme to brand the chapters, except for the Los Angeles Kings. And that chapter is form blue and form yellow, or form gold. Whoops.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I'm a Ducks fan. I hate the Kings, but the only team that they've worn it against is the Ducks, and it looked perfect. It's like, yeah, that's I don't like that team at all, but if I was ever going to buy a Kings jersey, might
That'd
be that
the one.
it blends everything so perfectly, and it's like, yeah, that's what that team is and should be, not this kind of drab black and silver. But
someday,
and if a Ducks fan likes it, you know,
that's
but then
true.
Again, this guy likes the Wild Wing jersey, so.
I don't like the Burger King jersey at the very least. That's
Wild that's Wing, good. Yes. Burger King, that's ridiculous. I hear you.
Yeah. Or paint the paintbrush numbers? No, not ridiculous at all.
Okay.
Very, very dignified. Well, thank you for joining us, Chris. You can check out Chris Creamer by going to sportslogos.net. Been around for like 25 years now and still going. I'm assuming you got a 25th anniversary logo in the works here for the website.
We haven't started it, but it's going to happen. Right, it has to.
Go with the Roman numerals.
Yes. You got to get that in this time.
Yes. That's right.
You can get Fabric of the Game, the stories behind the NHL's names, logos, and uniforms. It's on Amazon. It's on online, Barnes & Noble, Simon & Schuster. You can get it everywhere. Fine books are sold and enjoy that. You can also, of course, go to boards.sportslogos.net if you want to talk to all these all of us cretins on there discussing various sports logo stuff. And the Unified Podcast, there's an another episode coming out tomorrow. So looking forward to watching that or listening, and thanks again for joining us, Chris. It's been awesome talking to you. I feel like we could do this for another couple hours, but by the end we'd just be gasping and rasping something about the Browns that we'd have to just call it a night. So.
Right. Exactly.
Too much Browns talk on this show.
we gotta work on that.
You're not the first person to say that.
Thanks guys for having me. This is a lot of fun.
You bet. Thanks again, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
See you, Chris.
See ya.
Take care.